We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging. Hi friends, we have news of live gigs coming up in Melbourne and then around the country to follow. And for patrons, that means early ticket release and cheaper ticket prices. So, never been a better time to become a patron or to be a patron. So gigs coming up in Melbourne, by that I mean live podcast recordings with some of your favourite podcast guests. And, you know, more news to follow about travelling around Australia and doing the same thing. So we're coming and we'd love to see you there. Patron shout outs. Thank you so much. James Wilson, Alexandra Watson, Lena Turnbull, Faith Deans, Catherine Joyce, Julie McNamara, Sue Power, Brian Enright, Anonymous, very sexy, Shelley Gardner. Such easy names this week. Wow. Thank you so much for your support. And for those of you thinking of becoming patrons, please don't forget that it's $2 and $5 in US currency. So that's about $13,000 and $27,000 Australian. Okay. Thank you. The following podcast contains accounts of child sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised. In its most recent budget, the Australian government pledged $7.8 million towards the establishment of a child sex offenders register, which was surprising because it seemed to come out of nowhere. Well, it came out of Peter Dutton's brain, which is kind of the same thing. Child safety advocates have been debating it for years, of course, but no one had ever come close to actually making it happen in Australia. But now we're in a very tight election campaign. And who wouldn't vote for keeping kids safe? The thing is, though, that the Sex Offenders Register is way more complicated than it sounds, which is why even the people who want it can't agree on which one they want. In this episode, we'll hear from Hetty Johnston from Brave Hearts and from Bruce Morecambe from the Morecambe Foundation. They're both in favour of a register, but they disagree on which one, even though, and it hurts me to say this, but neither of their children would have been spared by a register of any kind.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb.
We'll also hear from Danielle Harris, who's an academic, and she's studied the American registers in all their mutations for 20 years. As a result, she raises some pretty compelling arguments as to why none of them work. And just to cheer us all up, in the end, we'll hear from Dean Morecambe. He's one of Daniel's brothers. He's usually very media shy, but he's doing something really cool and exciting. As we speak, he's doing the Kokoda Challenge to raise money for the Morecambe Foundation. Let's start with Hetty Johnston, a wonderful woman, a force of nature, as she explains Megan's Law to us. That's the law that Peter Dutton has based his idea on, and Hetty talks to us about the first time she heard about it.
I was ecstatic, and I thought, we've got to have that. But of course, nothing we do, it goes without research. I mean, we can't be doing things that don't stack, and the research just didn't stack. There are elements of it that were okay, but generally speaking, it just doesn't help us. It just doesn't actually stop offenders from offending. There are many, many reasons for that. But before I go into that, I'll explain. So then about 12 months later or 2 years later, there was a new register or a new project in the UK called Sarah's Law. Now, Sarah's Law is something that we support 100%, and we watched it happen for 2 years. The research supported it, and that's what we've been lobbying for. And then in Western Australia, the Western Australian government introduced a hybrid of the best elements of Megan's Law plus Sarah's Law. And that's what we're lobbying for. So, because that's research-based and that's what works. So, and I can explain why we are so opposed to the Megan's Law model.
Please do. So I take it the Megan's Law model is the one that Peter Dutton's department is advocating for at the moment. And is that the one that they've allocated funds for in the most recent budget?
It is indeed.
Okay.
Certainly, I can tell you that there is not an academic or a professional working in this field anywhere that I've met that supports this, and it's for good reason. And here's how it goes. Most sex offenders are known and trusted to the child. You know, the sex offender that snatches a child off the street, as happened with poor little Daniel and others, William Tyrrell, is not your common offence in Australia. One in five children, 20% of the population of our children, at least one in every classroom will be sexually assaulted, usually by someone known and trusted to them. So most of those offences will never be reported. Therefore, the offenders will never be convicted. Therefore, they will never be on a register, right? So 85% to 90% of sex offenders are never reported to police. So 75 to 85, 90% of offenders are already not going to be on that register, and they're probably coming over for a barbecue every Saturday, right? So that's what's happening. Of the ones that are notified to police, very few of those are actually convicted and less go to jail. Now, this register that Peter Dutton has proposed proposes that those that have been reported to police and then have been actually convicted and then are registered sex offenders, they're not all registered. And even the worst of the worst are only registered for a certain amount of time, most of them. Some of them are on the register for life, but that's very, very few. They're not even going to be registered. So this proposal deals with the tiniest amount of child sex offenders in our community. And we say, if we're going to be spending $7.8 million, let's get it right. And we need to change these laws so they make sense. So here's what we thought. First of all, we backed the WA model. So what's the WA model? It's a three-part thing. The first part is if a sex offender who's a reportable sex offender, that is they're registered, they have to report to police, disappears, goes underground, whatever, their name, details and everything about them without qualification is put up on the website. It's like an Amber Alert. It just goes up. It's everywhere. So that's beautiful. That's what we want. The second stage of it is that you as a resident living in any area can go onto the web and you can enter the register and check the register. So that's the same, except that you can only register, you have to say who you are. So you have to nominate who you are with your driver's license or whatever. And you can only check your locality, so your postcode and the surrounds of your postcode. So you can have a look in there to see if there's any dots on a map for whatever good that's going to do you, right? And you can look at the faces and whatnot of those people that live in that area. And then the third element is the Sarah's Law element. And this is a beautiful one. This is one I love. Keeping in mind, 85, 95% known to the family, the next-door neighbour, the babysitter, the somebody who's spending time with your family, anybody in Western Australia can ring police and say, look, I've got a new babysitter, new boyfriend, new neighbour, new coach, sporting coach, music teacher, doesn't matter, whatever. They're spending a lot of time with my kids. I just want to make sure they're not known to you and these people don't pose, this person doesn't pose a risk to my child. The police will tell you. And the person doesn't have to be a registered sex offender. They just need to have a history. That is concerning to children.
Okay, I'm just going to pop in here because I suspect the last bit might have gone over a few heads. I know it certainly went over mine the first time I heard it. But then I went back and I was Googling Hetty because I enjoyed our first conversation so much. And I came up with some stories about her daughter, Kayleen, and her husband, Ian, who decided to speak publicly for the first time about the very personal story that led to the start, the beginning of Bravehearts. They'd never spoken about it before last weekend, actually. And reading about this story, I knew I had to ring Hetty back. So the story is basically that when she was just 7 years old, Ian took Kayleen on a holiday to his parents' house in New Zealand. It was supposed to be a special treat, you know, a father-daughter trip. Kayleen was definitely acting strangely from the airport onwards. And on that first night in her grandparents' house, she was hysterical, actually. And by the time she was put to bed in her special bedroom in her grandparents' home, she was quite hysterical. While he was trying to calm her and comfort her, her father, Ian, eventually asked her the most difficult question a parent could ever ask a child. He asked her if anyone had ever touched her down there. He asked her if anyone apart from mummy or daddy had ever touched her while she was naked. And she gave the most difficult answer she's ever given in her life, which was, yes, Poppy. The Poppy she was referring to was Ian's father, who was downstairs Ian and his father were very close. They'd enjoyed a very close relationship for their entire lives. The following morning, Ian confronted his father and asked him straight out, "Have you sexually abused Kayleen?" And his father answered very quickly, "It was just a little touch, son." Alec Johnston eventually pleaded guilty to 22 charges of abuse and spent 2 years in jail. Of course, it turned their family upside down, and there are many relationships that were never repaired after that day in 1996.
Hedy Johnson speaking.
Hey, Hedy, it's Michelle Laurie. Hello, can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, I can. Hello, hey, darling. Sorry.
No, that's
all
right.
Oh, my God, I've just had a bit of a malfunction on my phone, but I've sorted it.
No worries. Can you talk for 5 minutes?
Sure.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to me again. I'm so sorry. It's just that
that's okay. How can I help?
I read the article about your wife and Kayleen. Your husband and Kayleen. And I thought,
yes.
Oh, if we could talk about that, that would be amazing. Like, everyone? How are they coping with having spoken out?
Yes. How are they? Well, Kayleen's in Sri Lanka.
Great, perfect.
Having a holiday, and Ian is fine and happy and really feeling, I think they're both feeling very happy and very empowered, which is awesome.
That is awesome, because we had a great chat the other day about the register, and that's all good. And I don't know, for some reason I just was Googling you again because I enjoyed our conversation so much, and then found this article, and I didn't really know that much about the family history, to be honest, behind Bravehearts. I knew there was something, but didn't.
Oh, thank you, lovely. Yeah, I mean, I talk about it, but it's not, it's sort of our stuff is what started it, but it's not what drives it still. It's like the three of us have sort of, and my other daughter, Ange, have just taken it on as a personal mission, really. Yeah, we really have. We've made this now. I mean, it's cost us, Michelle. Ian and I have spent our own money for the first 8 years or so. We ran broke. We had to pay for it because no one was helping us. It cost us in time and money, loss of income and all that for me, probably over $1 million. And I'm still paying. Yeah. So I still take less wages than I don't take the wages that are allowed for me. I take less because I know the organisation needs it. And so this is just it's a life mission. And this running for the Senate is really all about, it's real. It's not just because I'm bored. I really want to, what's happening in our family law system is a humanitarian crisis. It truly is. It's that bad. And the government knows it, and I know it, and anyone that's anywhere within QE of this system knows it. And they're sitting on their hands there while Rome is burning, kids are dying, cutting themselves. I can't stand it.
I think what I took from the story, though, is I thought, the obvious question to you would be, well, your father-in-law would not have been on the register, so it would not have helped your family. But I thought to myself, yeah, but you strike me as the kind of person who this sort of isn't always going to be about just your family and your situation.
No, it's not. That's what this has got. I didn't even consider our family situation in this. But it's true. If the court decides that they want to protect the child in inverted commas by not identifying the perpetrator because the perpetrator is a family member, which happens always, we have to change that too, because most of them want their perpetrator's name in lights up on the M1, you know.
Yeah.
Then they're not going to be on the register. There's so many reasons this register just doesn't work. And the WA model, I mean, when you ring police, you get the history of anybody that poses a threat to your child, whether they've been on a register or not.
Well, I suppose, though, so many people like Danielle and a lot of people say, look, we're opposed to it because there's no point, because there'd be such a small number of perpetrators who get on the list that it's just pointless. So what do you say to that?
I agree. Mm-hmm. But there is I want more. I don't want less than Peter Dutton. I want more. I want a register. I do want a register. I want the WA model. Now, in the WA model, there's a register as well. Yes, there is. But you have to identify yourself before you can get on and start poking around in there. And you have to agree to some common sense ethical rules around what you do with the information that you find to stop any vigilantism and stuff like that. But it's still a register. People, it's a public register. People can get on and they can have a look, right? So that doesn't change. But I just don't think it's worth anything. It's just, as I've said, it's the people that are on the register are few and far between the actual offenders. The beautiful thing about the WA model is it also incorporates Sarah's Law out of the UK. And that is a disclosure scheme. So if you've got a new person in your life, we know most offenders are known and trusted to the family. So they ingratiate themselves to the family first, and then once we trust them, then they move on to our children. That's standard. That's 85, 95% of the case. They're known and trusted. So that's the one that I want to go to.
But again, that's the one. Again, your father-in-law would not have been red flag, right? If you had found
he wouldn't be on any list. No. He wouldn't be on the register. But if he and his wife had separated, they didn't. But had they of, and he had have moved on to the next family, mm-hmm. and so grandma meets this new guy. He seems lovely, and everyone loved him. She could ring police and say, look, I've got a new chap in my life. He's spending a lot of time with my grandchildren. I just want to make sure that he's not known to police. He doesn't pose a threat to my children. They will tell her.
So, in other words,
it doesn't matter whether he's on the register or not. If he's got any history at all that poses a threat to her children, they will tell her.
So, in other words, you would have been able to put him on the register?
No, police, what it is...
But what I mean is that your family's, you know, what you went through would have put him on the register. Is that what you're saying?
No, he wouldn't have been on the register.
Yeah, right.
Because that would lead to the identity of all the children in the family who were being harmed at the same time. So he wouldn't have been on the register. So if Alec and Flo had a split up, Ian's father and stepmum, and he had moved on to another family, that family would be none the wiser about any of his background because he wouldn't be on the register and there'd be no official way for them to check. But what about if you introduce the Western Australian model that says you can check, you can ring police and you can say, I have a new chap in my life. He's spending a lot of time with my kids or grandkids, whatever it is. It could be a new neighbour or a sporting coach or whoever. It doesn't matter. If they're spending time, substantial time with your kids, you can ring police and you can get their background. That the police will say whether or not this person is a potential risk to your children or not.
So would they red flag Alec?
Okay. Well, if I rang, or if Alec, as I say, moved out of that relationship and into a different one and that woman rang police, then police would tell that woman about his background. Now, it wouldn't matter whether he's on a register because he wouldn't be on the register, but his police record is there.
Yes.
The police would disclose anything on his police record that posed a risk to children to that person who rang.
So he had a conviction, but he would never have appeared on a register because to appear on the register would have then identified his victims.
Identified the victims, correct.
I see.
And that's true for most of them. Most offenders, 30% are known and trusted to the family. They're members of the family.
Yes.
Therefore, they would never be disclosed. And actually the courts are suppressing the names of offenders in increasing numbers, and it shouldn't be so.
Yeah.
And I'm not against the register as such. I'm for people knowing who is in their life, who is contacting their children. See, the register that Peter Dutton has put up deals with the 10% of offenders who snatch kids off the side of the street, right? The proposal that Western Australia has and that we support and have done for years deals with the 85, 95% of offenders that are in our community. And that's the one we have to put our money behind. And it's a double whammy. It is a much stronger, much more effective program than, you know, you can Google it and have a look for yourself. It's just really effective. It goes to the heart of the problem, and that is 85, 95% are known and trusted to us before they offend against our kids. So
I did Google it, but I thank you so much because I apologise for talking to you about your particular situation, but I didn't
I
didn't understand it until you put it in those terms. Yeah, okay. That really helped me understand. Thank you. How many days left till Election Day, Hedy? You must be exhausted.
I am, but I'm just motivated. I've got to get in there, you know, any help is gratefully accepted.
HedyJohnson.com.au. Hetty Johnston's Brave Hearts Foundation provides lots of resources to help when speaking to children about keeping themselves safe. That's bravehearts.org.au, but we'll have all the links you need on our Facebook page. 13-year-old Daniel Morecambe was abducted from a bus stop on Queensland's Sunshine Coast by Brett Peter Cowan on December 7, 2003, and he was murdered probably within an hour. Cowan had two previous convictions for serious sexual assaults on children. In 1993, he pleaded guilty to multiple charges after a violent sexual assault on a six-year-old boy. In that case, it was alleged he'd left the boy to die with a punctured lung in an old car in bushland. The child managed to stagger to a service station for help. By 2003, Brett Cowan would have been on any sex offenders register you can imagine. But would that have prevented the horrific chain of coincidental events that placed him driving past Daniel, who was waiting alone at a lonely bus stop, for a bus that had broken down just down the road? Like Hetty Johnston, Daniel's parents Bruce and Denise have thrown themselves into keeping kids safe in Australia. It honestly never ceases to amaze me how prepared they are to work for child safety issues no matter what's going on in their own lives. I didn't realise when I sent an email asking Bruce for a podcast chat that he and Denise were about to live through yet another set of findings into the details of Daniel's death. This time, it's the coroner's findings, handed down 15 years after Daniel's disappearance. Among other things, the coroner found that police initially treated Daniel's disappearance as a case of a teenage runaway, wasting valuable time. He found that Cowan was identified as a potential suspect early on and admitted that he was in the area on the day in question, but that scientific testing of his car was never carried out. Two officers gave evidence that they nominated Cowan as a suspect in the early days of the investigation, but were rebuffed. Former police officer Dennis Martin told the inquest he told the then head of the homicide squad, Mike Condon, it was Cowan, but was told to fuck off. Condon denied the conversation ever took place. So that's the evidence Bruce Morecambe had been listening to all day when he spoke to me on the phone.
Hello, Bruce speaking.
Hey, Bruce, it's Michelle Laurie. How are you going?
Yeah, good, real good, Michelle. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thank you so much for this. Right. I'm so sorry. I didn't realise.
Yeah, no worries.
Didn't realise you guys had other stuff going on when I put in the request this week.
Oh no, that's no worries. You mean with the trial or the, not so much the trial, but the coroner's findings being handed down on Friday?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was, well, in some ways we're glad it's done and dusted, but obviously it's a tough thing to sit through and hear, you know, the summing up all again. But anyway, there were some wins for the next family that unfortunately walk in our footsteps. So that was the point of the mission, was to make it easier for someone else.
Yeah, I thought that was all done from your perspective. I didn't realise there was another part of the process.
We probably could have left it swinging in the breeze forever and a day. So after the trial and we'd gone through to the High Court Appeal, pretty well within a couple of days, Denise and I, through our solicitor, wrote to the coroner and said, mate, we haven't finished our original inquest. Can we please just tidy that up? And while that looked a little unusual, I suppose, the point of it was, you know, there were four reasons for holding the inquest way back in 2010 was pretty well, what happened to Daniel? Who's responsible if it's not such good news? You know, we clearly found the answers to that. But the other two things were, and these were the ones still incomplete, you know, the police initial response, was it adequate? And the ongoing response, was that adequate? So they were the questions that we personally don't care. Like, it's not going to change anything. But we thought, let's just grit our teeth and get through it to make it easier and to hopefully improve the system for somebody else. And we think, you know, we've done our bit and done our... it's up to the legislators and the police... people that write their code of conduct to make those required changes. But we think we've done our little bit anyway.
Oh, you guys have done a lot for other people. You've always been really focused on that with the foundation and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, cheers, thanks.
Yeah. So the other thing, of course, that's happening, I was really surprised by this. I didn't know that we were at this stage in the conversation, but in the federal budget last week, of course, there was an announcement that funds have been allocated to the establishment of the public register for child sex offenders.
Yeah, I've actually, you're probably asking, how did we greet that news? To be honest, I know they promised $14 billion for road and rail upgrades and all that, but the best announcement concealed in the, you know, the minor details was this. It was some initial funding for the public accessible sex offenders website, and we just think that's massive. We've had governments and oppositions, you know, around the country at different times excited, but no one actually does anything. And this is the first time we've actually had some commitment to, hey, this is on the table, not just talk, we're going to do something. So, you know, we're all anxious to see where that goes. Of course, you know, would have to get through the Senate. But we have, in terms of supporters for such a register, you know, Senator Hinch and others have publicly said, this is what we're going to do. So, you know, we think that that may well be a passage with, you know, due discussion, but we'll get past. So, but we've got an election coming up, so we're never quite sure what the implications of that may be.
Yeah. Oh, you've got a lot of supporters for a lot of reasons. Like, you know, let's be honest, there are emotional reasons. It's because we love you guys, and all of us, I think, as a community, feel like whatever you and Denise ever asked for, we would want to give you from an emotional perspective, but also because you two do so much work in the space of child protection. And so I feel as though you know, you've done your homework, you've done your research, you work in it every day, and you would know what is required and what is a good idea.
Yeah. I know there are some opponents to the, you know, proposed legislation regarding the register, but at the end of the day, you know, it's about educating the public, particularly kids, mums, dads, grandparents, and also teachers. So people in the education sphere, this is a good thing to educate the public about potential predators that live in their region. So within their postcode or postcode of the school, you know, the people will be able to tap that information up and bring up some statistics. And, you know, it's not about throwing a brick through the person's window or smashing his letterbox on the way home from school. It's about a discussion to educate the kids. This is not material or, you know, shadowy stories that happens on the other side of Australia or on the other side of the world. This happens in this postcode. Here we go. But it's always underlined that the people on the register, those shameful people, these are only people that have been convicted and found guilty through the courts. Clearly, there are many, many, probably an equal or greater number, that have never been caught but have done equally bad things. So this is about educating the public. It's not a silver bullet. And clearly, there will be far more that have never been caught. But, you know, I think it'll be an eye-opener for the Australian community to say, wow, I didn't know this stuff existed, or, you know, I thought there are some high-profile people, you know, like Cowan or Dennis Ferguson, or, you know, those hideous people like that. But, you know, we only ever talk about half a dozen people in total. Sadly, there are many tens of thousands of people that have abused kids or downloaded child porn and get their rocks off with that stuff. You know, these are people that are dangerous in our community. So, you know, we certainly need some safeguards for any legislation that came through to stop the vigilantism and to make sure that that is never an issue. And I'm sure it would never be.
I think it would be, though, Bruce, otherwise. Like, what are the safeguards? Because I was just saying to Hedy, I spoke to Hedy earlier and I said, look, honestly, I reckon if I rang up now and found out that a bloke in my street, and this is sort of why I don't want to know, because I assume there would be someone living close to me who I would find out does have a terrible record, right? And that's all good and well now. But later on tonight, I have a few wines, or I tell my brother or my neighbour, and all of a sudden you know, we're at this bloke's house and we want him out of our neighbourhood. Like, how do you prevent that from happening?
Well, you just need to have an adequate law that says if you publicise, if you offend, if you intimidate, or, you know, whether that's in the real world, the online, these people that are on the register, that truly is an offence. And
but look at Dennis Ferguson. I mean, he was chased from one town to another in Queensland, and I'm not defending him, and I'm not saying for a second that I wouldn't do the same. I don't want that animal anywhere near me.
Like, they've got to live somewhere.
That's right, where?
We're only highlighting, you know, two or three or half a dozen really bad ones.
Yeah.
I would guarantee in any postcode there's 100.
So like, where do they live then? What are we going to do with them?
Well, we just need to educate the public that these people exist in our community. They are everywhere. Don't worry about Dennis Ferguson when he's let out of jail or some other hideous creature who's been in jail for 25 years.
Yeah.
They are really the tip of the iceberg. It's the ones that just blend in.
Yeah,
are the issue. And if I could just give one example, I know Hetty doesn't like it, but Hetty likes her particular website for sex offenders. Mm. I'm not saying that ours necessarily is the one. I'm saying we need a public accessible website for sex offenders, but let's debate who's in and who's out, and at what level do we say these people are on or these people are off? And, you know, it may well be just the worst of the worst. So there might only be, who knows, 1,000 people in Australia. Mm-hmm. But if it includes adults that have downloaded child porn and worse, there'll be 35,000 people on that list.
Oh, God.
They're the sorts of numbers. It is a chronic problem. And I should just point out, it is not the 16-year-old boy that's taken a photo of the, you know, 15-year-old girlfriend and, you know, that's considered child porn. You know, those sort of romantic type things, we're not interested in that. You know, they're not predators. It's the old dude that's taken advantage of kids. They're the most dangerous. But I'll give one example, and this is about educating the public and providing the public with the required tools. That is, like, everyone uses their iPad or whatever to hire a car or order food, or, like, we just can't function without it. So why isn't it a safety net? Here's one example. A young mum with two kids, I don't know, 4 and a 3-year-old, she goes on eHarmony or a similar dating site. She hopes to meet Mr. Wonderful. She finds Mr. Wonderful. She doesn't know, in the current climate, is he a shocking person with a past history of offending against kids? Because when you talk to police, the number one area of offending is mum's new boyfriend.
Yeah.
That you know, we all know that 9 out of 10 offences against kids is from somebody they know. But to gain the trust within a family unit like that, and after, who knows, 2 months, you know, that particular male person may well suggest, why don't you pop out with a few drinks, go to the cinemas with your girlfriends, I'll mind the kids tonight. And from there, you know, we all just sort of shake our heads and think, oh. But at the end of the day, at least we're providing some tools to the young mums and dads that are out there that can at least identify the potential risks that are out there. So that's what we say. It's a good thing where in the comfort of your own home and the privacy of your own home, you can just tap in some simple details about a person, their alias, whatever, and so it'll bring up those details. And it's your choice from there. You say, oh, that was 12 years ago. I'll talk to him about that, see if he's a reformed person. Or, you know, if you really think that's the chance you want to take, or you say, oh, wow, I didn't know he was such a two-faced person. I'm going to send him away tomorrow and never see him again. So, you know, it gives those tools to the community. But most of all, it's about educating the kids on the predators that potentially and do live in our neighbourhoods. It doesn't stop someone driving, you know, from neighbourhood to neighbourhood.
Yeah.
But at least it's a tool to educate, start a conversation.
But it doesn't stop us checking other neighbourhoods either, right? So what I'm hearing from you is that right now you're talking about let's start a conversation rather than a sort of a blanket approach of let's have a website that names every person who's ever had even the sort of most minimum charge laid against them.
Well, that is up to the legislators.
Yeah.
And they're always in that difficult position. They're like politicians. I know we bag them all, but really they have factions to this side and
you know, oh, yeah, who'd be one? Side.
And it compromises their number one gun. So, you know, that's weak. It doesn't have teeth. This is too powerful. Like if you go with Megan's Law in the US, and certainly that is the model Darren Hinch favours. And I've heard him and, you know, stood next to him. He said, that's what we want. Let's go for it. And, like, they're easy words to say and good on him. But, you know, me as a common sense, down-to-earth person, I sit here and think, wow, if that ever gets up, I'll be dead set surprised. Because it'll be between, you know, that'll be moderated considerably, and we're okay with that. It is about educating them. We don't need to know that number 7 Fish Street is where this particular animal lives. Mm. We just need to say in this suburb there are 15 people with hideous records, and it's not going to have street by street. But as you say, isn't, you know, the local IGA is going to say, oh, did you know? Mm-hmm. That person, you know, there's 15 in our street. Well, I know 6 of them because they come in here and shop, you know. But we can't help that. But I think at the end of the day, that is a good thing. You know, it's about educating the public. People are not going to throw bricks if they know they're going to go to jail for doing that.
If you cast your mind back to before you entered this world, could you ever have imagined how many people like this were in your community?
No, we were completely naive.
Yeah, same.
We were naive. We were naive to the point of saying we had 3 boys. Like, we were silly.
Do you mean thinking that you would never be touched by this because you didn't have a daughter?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is the naivety of us. And I'm happy to say that. And, you know, the internet was, you know, in its infancy, social media, no one had invented it at that stage. So the world is even a potentially more dangerous place today. We didn't think, like, oh, boys, oh, how lucky are we?
And you lived in the country, you know? You lived in an idyllic place in the country where you knew everyone. And
that's what you tell yourself. But, you know, a public sex offenders register may well show up that Palm Woods, Woombye and neighbouring regions, there's an issue. But it doesn't matter whether there's 6 in your suburb or 36. People can jump in a car and drive 10 minutes and, you know, they're 8 kilometres in another suburb.
Bruce and Denise Morecambe have 2 adult sons now, Dean and Bradley. They were teenagers when Daniel was abducted. In fact, Bradley is Daniel's twin brother. And as they've grown into men, they've tried to keep their lives very private. But they're both about to walk the Kokoda track to raise funds for the Morecambe Foundation. Later in this episode, we'll hear from Dean, briefly, because he's very shy. But first, we'll give Bruce a chance for a proud dad brag. Hey, I spoke to Dean the other day about the Kokoda.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so great, isn't it? Those boys are doing that.
Yeah, he's muscling up. He's really looking forward to it. And he's the only one of the whole group that's declined a porter. So he wants to carry his big 25-kilo bag. So, but he's strong enough. But he's been training like that. He just sets himself a benchmark beyond what you need to do. And you know, he challenges himself. So he's really looking forward to it. It'll be a great exercise. And Brad as well.
Yeah.
Who's probably a bit quieter of the two in terms of media exposure and things, but he's very keen. And I went on a walk with him yesterday as a bit of exercise and, some one-on-one time, I suppose, as well.
Oh, you must be so proud of them. I mean, you know, for everything you've all been through, obviously they both like to keep a low profile, but to choose their moment, you know, and do their bit, and obviously both living good lives as grown-ups. And and Dean just sort of mentioned, he made it clear that he didn't want to talk a lot about, and again, I was unaware of the inquest sort of business happening, so he made it clear earlier to my producer, I don't want to talk about the case. And I said, no, tell him that's fine, I just want to talk about Kokoda. Anyway, as we were chatting, I did say to him, oh, you know, do people get a bit weird about you sometimes because you still live in the small community? And he said, yeah, they do a bit sometimes. But, you know, I mean, they've obviously grown up very well adjusted and they seem to be doing really well.
Yeah, the recognition and lots of things, the foundation that obviously your family is number one. And to watch those very impressionable boys, 13 and 15 when Daniel was abducted and suspected of murder, you know, that's it was terrible for us. But at the end of the day, hey, that's your brother and your twin brother. And let's face it, for teenage boys, they're difficult times. I think that's pretty well. They could have gone to the dark side.
Oh, yeah.
Well and truly. And, you know, that was a really great fear of losing another one. So, you know, that was the challenge. You know, do what you can. You know, but boys are rebellious anyway. So, you know, Dean got his tattoos and you know, spent more than a decade, I suppose, with heavy metal music and things. He's now married, so he's had to give all that stuff away. But one would say he's settled down, I think, is the more traditional term. He's settled down. But, yeah, no, I'm sure he still has, you know, a few guitars and things, and I'm sure he'll be back another day. But, yeah, no, that was his truly music. Music really was his saviour, no question of that. So, and I'm sure others, you know, that you would speak with would say the same thing. It's just a great release and takes it to a happy place, you know.
If you're lucky, if you're very, very lucky, you find something that does. Congratulations and beautiful family. Beautiful family. Oh. So congratulations to you, Bruce. Please,
Michelle.
Please give our love to your beautiful family, the rest of the family and the lovely Denise.
Yes, I'll do. Will do. No worries at all.
After the break, we talk to an academic, because that's what you have to do when you have these conversations, isn't it? We need an academic to talk us through the history of this register idea, where we've been, where we're at, what it's taught us, and maybe where we should go. That's coming up. Coming up on Australian True Crime, we'll check in with Dean Morecambe, Daniel's older brother. And the brothers in the Morecambe family have kept a very low profile, as you can imagine, would probably be the thing you would do in their situation. But they are both doing something for the foundation. They're off on an adventure, and we want to support them and help them. And I think you probably would like to do that too. So we'll talk to Dean after we talk to Danielle Harris. Danielle Harris is the senior lecturer at the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Griffith University. She's the research chair of the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, an associate editor of the Journal of Sexual Aggression, and sits on the executive board of directors of the Australia and New Zealand Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abuse. She has specifically studied the area of sex offenders registers, and she lived and worked in California for a long time, where it seems to me that the idea of alerting the public to the proximity of a sex offender may have reached extreme levels.
When I lived in California for 15 years, we used to get a robocall. It started out where you get a CD-ROM, or you could pick one up from the local police station and it would give you all the information. Then it became a website that you could go and access. And then the people that were on a particular level, you'd get a robocall from the police saying, "Hello, this is the Palo Alto Police Department. We're calling to let you know that a sex offender has been released into your zip code."
Oh, my God.
Which isn't necessarily a good way of making people feel safe. Jacob Wedling was the first child for whom legislation was written. Mm-hmm. He was abducted in 1989, and the Jacob Wedling Act basically created NCMEC, the National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children. Patty Wedling, his mother, said to the police, "You know, what can we do? How can we make this better? How can we find my son?" And they said, "Well, we need a national repository of information. We need to know if someone goes missing in Minnesota and they cross the border, we need to know that we need the people in Wisconsin to know that there's somebody on the run, and we need the people in Minnesota to be able to share the information with people in other states. So we need a national repository of information that law enforcement has access to," which was the beginning of the sex offender register. So that's people who have been convicted already of a sexual offence and law enforcement is aware of them. That was 1989. The law probably came in a couple of years after that. And then 1994, Megan Kanker was abducted and raped and murdered. That happened in New Jersey. And she was killed by a convicted sexual offender. And it was discovered very quickly that she was killed by a man who lives down the street who had, you know, invited her over to see a non-existent puppy. Mm. And her parents said, "What could we do differently?" And they argued that if they had known that that man had lived there, then they wouldn't have let her go over and play with the puppy or whatever. that led to, while Jacob Wetherling Act was still a bill, the language of the legislation said that the community may be notified, and it turned into shall be notified with Megan's Law. So now all of a sudden, as soon as somebody was released into the community who had committed a sexual offence, the community would be informed. There are ways that we can prevent the majority of sexual offences. The registry isn't it, and there's a couple of reasons why. The first one is that the registry is largely inaccurate. There are a couple of assumptions that the register rests on, and that is that people are going to obey the law. Now, the people that end up on the register are people who have already demonstrated that they don't respect the law, because they're the ones who have already committed these offences. Mm. So having laws and expecting those people to comply with them is sort of a bit silly to start with.
What you're saying is that the register relies upon the people on the register to comply with laws, like, you know, keep updating their addresses, basically.
And being honest, when I would observe this sort of stuff, like compliance visits at a parole office in California, we would sit in the office and the guys would come in and they'd say, "Hi, I'm just in for my weekly checkup. Here's my address. Here's my whatever." And they'd say, "No, I don't have a car." And then you'd watch them walk out, and then the probation officer has to check the box. It says, "No, he says he doesn't have a car. Yes, he says he lives at this address." And then he walks out and gets into a car and drives away. Now, he might not own that car, but he has a car, and maybe it would be useful to know what the license plate is, etc. But the legislation is incomplete, and so you can only go by what the person tells you. And if you're talking about the people that are highly fixated pedophiles who have psychopathic tendencies and offend against strangers, etc., they're going to get around whatever legislation you build, because that's the kind of people we're talking about. And what happens instead is that the majority of the people that end up on the register are the people that we've caught. We sort of imagine a funnel, and we have at the top all of the people that have been abused, and then how many of those people ever actually report it to anybody, to their friend, to their mother, to their parent, to a loved one, to whatever, let alone how many people actually go to the police. And then of the people that go to the police, how many of them are taken seriously? How many of them are investigated? How many of them have enough evidence, still have the stain on the dress, or still have the person's address, or remember enough specific details to be able to get a conviction or even a charge, right? Mm. And so you get that. Now we're at a smaller number. We're moving further down the funnel. Now you have the people, you've got an arrest and the police have believed the victim, and it's happened recently enough that there's actually some evidence to go on, and there's still physical evidence, and now you need to get it to a court. So now you need the police to be willing to prosecute, and now you need the victim and the witnesses, hopefully, to be willing to speak up in a panel, wood panels courtroom of strangers, and talk about the most intimate and horrific thing that ever happened to them, and then be cross-examined about it. And so you end up with a much smaller group of people that get through that phase. And then after you've done all of the he said, she said stuff and the cross-examination and the psych examinations and hopefully got some evidence, you have an even smaller number of people who have made it through the funnel of the criminal justice system and been convicted. And then you have an even smaller number of those who end up in custody. And the sex offender register, the way that it's proposed, would tell us about people who have made it through that system and then been released. And in my experience and in my education, the kinds of people that end up making it through that system tend to be of a lower socioeconomic status. They also tend to be ethnic minorities. They tend to be over-policed. They tend to be underrepresented and poorly represented. They tend to commit certain kinds of offences. We're not really getting the stranger danger guys that everybody's afraid of.
Well, that's what 7.8 million gets you, apparently. A lot of options. So many options. Hopefully you feel like you understand them, or at least you've heard them all. I'm sure we haven't even heard them all. I'm sure there's millions of options when it comes to sex offender registries. Goodness me. Will we ever get one? Do we need one? I don't know. I feel like a nice relaxing walk in the countryside. Okay, it's not really that. It's actually the Kokoda track. Remember we talked earlier about the fact that Dean Morecambe is going to do that walk as a fundraiser for the Morecambe Foundation. Well, here he is telling us all about it. So you still live on the Sunshine Coast or around there somewhere?
Yeah, still on the Sunshine Coast, yeah.
Ah, beautiful. I did get the message, by the way, so don't stress about what, you know, you do and don't want to talk about, so that's cool. Do you mind, though, if we talk about, you know, like what's going on in your life these days? What are you up to?
Oh, I'm busy doing tree work. I've been with the company for about 12 years now.
Okay.
Doing all power line contract tree work.
Oh, so you cut around the power lines. You're that guy, are you?
That's me, yep.
Ah, okay, yeah. That's cool.
Got married last September.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, we bought 3 acres, so that pretty much keeps me busy on my weekends, and that's pretty much where I'm at now.
It's such a beautiful place, isn't it? Up that part of the world is just so lovely, and it's so nice to be a bit out of town and have some land.
Yeah, that's right. Away from the neighbours and keep you busy all weekend, mowing and tidying up. We've got two horses at home, so.
That sounds very, very beautiful. I understand, you know, that people must want to talk. Do they? Do people want to talk about the history, the family history and that a lot with you?
Generally, most of my friends and people I work with, they already know everything that sort of happened, so people don't really delve into it too much.
When you meet new people and they hear your name, because it is a small community,
yeah.
Are they sort of, I would say rude enough, because maybe I'm being overly sort of judgmental, but are they rude enough to jump in and ask?
Some people want to ask. I've had a lady at Queensland Transport. She said, I just gave her my name. She's like almost in shock. Oh my God, can I touch you? She wanted to touch my arms. Just like, that was a little bit weird, but most people are like in good, nice about it and everything like that. They're not in a negative light.
No, of course not. So, but it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Because a lot of us strangers think we love your family, you know? So,
yeah.
And we feel like we want to hug you all the time, which is weird. And so maybe when we meet you,
Mum
we think we can.
Mum and Dad get it a lot more than me because I try to stay out of the media as much as I can. So I just try to live a pretty private life.
Mm-hmm. But on this occasion, you're doing something specifically for the foundation. So how big a decision was that to put yourself out there to do something like this, to do a fundraising thing?
Well, the opportunity came up through Act for Kids if we wanted to do it. And we pretty much just jumped at it and said, yeah, we'd like to do that. Opportunities like this don't come up too often. And while it's going to be physically and probably mentally tough, but I thought we could raise some money for the foundation, and we're up to about 10,600 now. We had our goal at 10,000, so we've hit that. And if we can raise a little bit more over the coming weeks and even while we're gone, that's a bit of a bonus, and we're pretty happy with that.
It's awesome. You're doing the Kokoda track. I just can't even imagine. I have a lot of friends who've done it. Well, when I say a lot, I mean, you know, a handful, 4 or 5, because they're footy players generally. And it's so like incredibly fit young men whose job is fitness. So what sort of training are you doing?
Probably 4 to 5 days a week for the last couple of months. I've been training probably 1 to 2 hours a day, either 9 or 10 Ks with my pack. And then the next day I might do 4 or 5 and then an hour's gym and just kind of mix it up like that. So have a day off when I need it here or there, but try to do 2 hours, probably 4 to 5 days a week. And I'm hoping that I'm pretty physically active at work anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that's enough to get me through, but been training with up to about 23 kilo pack. And they said probably 18 to 20 I'll be carrying. Oh. So I feel like I should be strong enough to the pack side of things, but I think it's just the distance and the time. And day after day after day, your legs getting tired and things, but I should be able to hopefully just push through it and it should be good.
Have you spoken to many people who've done it?
Not really, no. Bradley's neighbours done a lot of walking overseas and things, and he was saying I was with heavier packs, and they were saying it's the time takes its toll on your legs and things, but I'm hoping that the training we've done is enough. Bradley's been doing 5 kilometres every morning at 3:45 before work.
Wow.
So plus trying to do stairs and things after work. So
I'll tell you, one of the things I've heard repeatedly is one of the biggest psychological blows during the walk, Dean, is that just as your legs are feeling like they can't carry you any further, you'll look up and you'll see one of the local guys just skipping ahead of you in thongs.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Just yeah, like it's they're, no they're big deal.
For it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Probably done it 100 times.
Yeah, absolutely, yep. Every day. It's one of those things I've heard, like Everest, where like rich people sometimes go and do it now, but they don't carry anything, you know? They just kind of swan along and they let other people carry all their gear, but you guys are doing it for real.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I cancelled my Porter.
Yeah, right.
So hoping to, I thought, I should be strong enough. I can carry it myself. If they can carry it next to me, I can carry it myself. So
still got his number though, just in case.
I said if you need one, we can organise one, but I'll try not to if I can avoid it, just on my own.
How many days is it?
8 days on the track. I think it's seven nights on the track, and then kind of a night either side with, like, you got a travel day there, and then we finish the night before Anzac Day. We have dawn service there, and then we fly out on the Friday.
Oh, that's massive.
So that should be pretty special, especially hearing stories along the way of certain things that happened. It should be pretty special to be there for that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, actually, I'm ashamed to say. Yeah, a couple of years ago around Anzac Day, I spoke to an old digger who ran the cholera hospital there along the track. Yeah, to imagine doing that when you're so depleted and so sick and when you're being, you know, driven along by enemy soldiers without much mercy. Yeah.
That's right. We're just walking from A to B and they don't know what's around the corner. So
they
would have had it a lot harder.
Oh, good on you, man. How old are you now?
31.
Okay, so you're in the peak of your powers, Dean.
I hope so. Hopefully it's not downhill from here. No, all going well.
Yeah, well, good on you. This is fantastic. Yeah, I know how private you have been over the years, and so good on you for putting yourself out there a little bit and raising some money. I know your family still works so hard on the foundation and the good work that the foundation does, the really proper grassroots work in classrooms and with kids, educating kids on their safety and how to keep themselves safe and how to understand these things from a kid's perspective. My kids are 9. I've got twins, and it's sort of an increasing conversation with us, and I didn't realise how hard it is to explain these things to them, explain privacy and safety and get that through their heads without telling them things that are really scary.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want to put an image out there that everyone's bad or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's just about trusting the people that you know, and if you know something's wrong, to speak up about it.
Isn't it? That idea of teaching them to trust their instincts and trust their feelings and get out of a situation, you know, wherever possible when it just doesn't feel right and all of those things.
Right.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, sir. And we will share the links. Which site are you going with for the fundraising?
Everyday Hero.
Everyday Hero. We'll share those links and all that kind of stuff. Congratulations. Well, have fun.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Talk to you another day.
Thank you for subscribing to Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week with a new case and a new episode.